The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
Ready to put a little spin on your day? Then check out Chumba Casino's new online social casino game, Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's free and packed with 10,000 ways to play, only at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
This is Hidden Tillers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Green.
Yeah, the Siders, 16 kids, the horror story that is. We're going to do a psychological breakdown of this today. If you've been wondering, how does this happen? How does one's mind function to allow this to actually play out the way that it appears to have been playing out? That's what we're doing today. Four adults kept 16 children in a 12 by 12 room for years while paying property taxes, some holding jobs, shopping at the Dollar General. It wasn't all chaos. It was somewhat maintained. Psychotherapist Siobhan Scott is with us to help break down the psychology of a household that functioned somewhat in public and allegedly ran something of an unspeakable horror house in private, including the question at the center of this case. Elizabeth Siders was married at 15 while 7 months pregnant at 18 years old. Her husband, she's a defendant. What happened in her mind in between might explain a lot. We have a lot to get into today. Your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube as we work our way through it. We're going to start with the mind that builds this room. And Gary Jr., he delivered DoorDash orders all day. He's, from what we understand, the father of some of the kids, all of the kids, we don't know. And then he went home to 16 children in a room covered in feces. Yeah. Two completely separate realities. He's dropping off your Taco Bell, and then he's back in the horror house with the 16 children and feces every way. Oh, I don't think that was bean burritos from Taco Bell. Wait a second.
Oh, it makes a second guess. Well, DoorDash.
Maybe it explains the crypto Sploridium outbreak that's going on right now as well. What does it take psychologically, Siobhan, to live In two worlds like this? Because he presents himself one way at the Dollar General, at the dropping off your Taco Bell, and then going home to this. It seems one would think, well, you couldn't possibly have two such stark realities going on at the same time, but apparently you can, Siobhan.
Apparently, it doesn't take a lot to function delivering DoorDash, right? Because I can't imagine this guy was terribly sophisticated in his presentation anywhere. But the first three things that popped into my head when I just took a glance at this horrible story, and it didn't take long. Number one, cognitive impairment. There's something wrong intellectually with these folks. Is it dementia? Is it just low IQ? You know, there's something off. Then throw in some mental illness into the blender, and we don't know enough to know. Is there some schizophrenia? Is there another major disorder of some kind? And then throw in abuse and blend it all up. And this is the kind of family you get. And unfortunately, I think they may not have 16 or 18 kids living in their homes, but I think there are a lot of families out there who are living in similar conditions.
Yeah, I mean, that was the first thing that came to my mind when I started absorbing this story is, I mean, it's getting the headlines because it's 16 kids. So it's like, wow, that's the big wow draw. But my initial reaction was, just go drive around any city in the United States, even small towns, especially in very impoverished areas. And you may not have 16 kids. You may have 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, whatever. In very similar conditions, directly in front of us every damn day. And if anybody's pretending that this isn't going on everywhere, you're not aware. You're not awake. You're not paying attention. My reaction was, this is not rare. This is just one that's being exposed because it has a big number in front of it.
Exactly. 100% right there with you. I worked with a case many years ago in California that had some similarities, but it was only two kids. Mm-hmm. And you're right. It did not hit the news in any kind of a big way. And I can't remember who turned the family in, but somehow CPS had gone out there and found these horrendous, filthy living conditions with dirty diapers just piled up, soiled animal feces throughout this home. And the children were toddlers. And so fortunately, they were rescued out of that. They didn't live in it for years and years. But one of my roles was to try to determine, are these people capable of parenting again? Mm-hmm. And I did not believe that they were. But that was what was going on in that case. You had some mental illness. You had people who were not terribly bright in the first place. There was some abuse going on. The wife was being abused by the husband. But the really scary thing, what kind of work did they both do? Fast food. They both worked. I won't say which I remember the chain. I've never eaten there since. But to function at home on such a low level and then go out. And I think one of them was the manager or assistant manager of the food place.
Oh, God.
And to apparently show up at work and manage people and produce food that other people bought. It's scary how much we don't really know.
What's so striking on this case, there's so many things that are so striking on this case, but the potential and most likely generational, not just trauma, but generational stupidness and all the other cascading over the years and years and years. So if that's correct, Siobhan, in this case, how do you start breaking down that generational stupid? I mean, it's called generational stupidity yesterday. I don't really have a term for how abhorrent all these behaviors are, but it's so normalized for them that it's just their known behavior. Learns, or is it a product of the mental illness? Is it a combination of everything? And then how do you break it?
Combination of everything. And, you know, there are just people that are not fixable, sadly. And if you have somebody that's grown up in a home like this, and particularly multi-generations of this kind of behavior, there may not be a lot you can do for them, but you want to get the kids out of it. And the sooner you get the kids out, the better, because the brain is fortunately malleable, particularly, you know, with young people. And you've just got to get them in an entirely different environment and teach them what normal is and help them develop all of the different, you know, abilities and skills that they've just been deprived of.
How much, I'm going to follow up one more, because Tony and I were talking about this yesterday with this case. You know, we're doing the best we can to solve all the problems of the world yesterday and when we cover cases like this. And I know I've had very close people in my own life that were able to, I wouldn't say save themselves, because I don't think anyone goes in kind of save yourself mode. They just have an experience that saves them because of a good, rich, healthy experience. And it didn't take much. It took a summer camp and going to a summer camp with good exposure, good, healthy people that they could recognize a yin from the yang. You know, mm-hmm. a lot of times we don't know the horrors we're in unless we have context. And like the poor children here don't have context, mm-hmm. except this is the only lifestyle they know. That's why some of the descriptions coming out are so horrendous. So going to that, how much does it take? What does it take to give, and what kind of exposure and at what ages do you think it would take to kind of infiltrate a sect of our society that is impoverished? There's the, because we were talking about it yesterday too, you know, that when the tax base in this local area or even a state doesn't support any services, what can you do? Does it, something like a camp, can it make a difference? Does it, is it a volunteer? Because again, the child welfare system and a lot of is overwhelmed. Even though you have people in there taking advantage, you know, from the welfare state, being able to, you know, make money off of having more kids. I mean, it's so twisted. Long narrative question to what is it? What can you do at that lower grassroots level?
Well, I think your point is well taken about just even any kind of corrective experience like a summer camp can do some good for a child and can help them gain a perspective that there is another lifestyle out there. There's another way to be in the world. But for kids who are this deprived, who have some of them don't even know how to communicate normally, apparently they don't have speech. This is going to be a tough road, and they're going to really need to be in a permanent, safe environment with normal people who can model for them everything that they've missed growing up developmentally. They need lots of support, ideally some therapy, you know, that would probably go on for a long time. And really, you're looking at trying to, the rest of their lives, undo these early years, and everybody's going to go through that differently. Of course, there's no formula, but they need a lot.
There's a lot.
And we're talking about people that are not fixable. I mean, this is an interesting, because you have your grandparents in their 70s in the house, their son, his wife, and then 16 children. And we look at the wife, who everybody is looking at, the mother who birthed all of these kids, from what we understand. And again, a lot of these details have yet to be officially confirmed, I should state, by authorities. So allegedly in front of everything we're talking about. When you have this kind of just generational stupidity and ignorance that's going on, and you mix it all together, I'm looking at the wife, at the mom, who was 15, I believe, when she had the first kid. She was seven, so she would have been 14 likely when she got pregnant.
And even reportedly, 13 when she had her first pregnancy. Again, allegedly.
Oh, well, there's,
like, it gets, yeah, it's
worse. But wait, there's more.
Yeah, wait, there's more.
That's our but wait, there's more moment. So you have that. And people who don't know anything different. How different is she from the children at this point? Because she was a child. She's younger than half of the kids in the, she was younger than half the kids in the house.
Yeah.
When this began with her. So, I mean, as much as, you know, she is an adult and at some, there is autonomy there to a certain extent, but at some point, if you are screwed with your genetics and you have a low IQ and you have low cognitive functioning abilities, you have, who knows? I mean, God knows what the laundry list is of issues here that prevented her from doing the right thing. How much do we need to be looking at some of these people, or one of these people, or any of these people, the adults in the room who are being charged as being victims of the circumstance, or do we not at this point, with them being adults, and she's managed now at this point to produce 16 people at some point? You've had a few reps in the world as an adult. It's horrible what happened to you, but you do have some responsibility at some point.
I very much see her. I'm in the camp of seeing her as a victim. Yes, okay. She was impregnated by someone at 13. We don't know who that was, but apparently was taken in by the Sider family and partnered with Gary, the younger mm-hmm. Gary, and then began having his babies. And off for her, parents signed off for her to marry at 15.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have a daughter that age yourself. Can you ever imagine your child is pregnant and here's another family that wants to take her in and she's going to get married now? And, oh, well, there's nothing we can do about this. So we just go along with it. I mean, there's a lot of adult behavior to be dissected and analyzed here. But I think if you were doing an evaluation with her, you would probably find someone with very severe trauma responses mm-hmm. going on.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
we don't know what kind of violence. I would be surprised if she has not been subjected to violence.
Sure.
It's my guess that's been a part of it.
Part of my cold conjecture on that as well is, you know, do some DNA testing and really, were all those children her choice?
Right.
Yeah. Were all those children Gary Jr.'s is my question.
Right.
The potential for, I don't even want to say the words because again,
yeah, the words that guilty, YouTube doesn't like. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. But trafficking yeah. and everything else that the potential in here. And again, you know, I really just severely hope the investigators are doing a lot of due diligence as not just this one really, really messed up family dynamic, if you can call it a family, but one cabal of people, is their tendrils. You know, what you know, because the probability of this being a really isolated event, to your point earlier when you kicked this off, Tony, is really slim to none. Because, you know, what's that 10% rule? If you see one thing, the likelihood of there being at least 10 more are really, really high. At least when you start dealing with abuse issues, they're really endemic many, many times.
Well, especially when you have, I mean, obviously the attraction point with the public is there's 16 kids. They probably wouldn't be talking about this as if there was 2, 3, 4, or 5, because it wouldn't get the attention that it does because this stuff is so rampant. That being said, how much of this being allowed to exist is more so societal around them, and this doesn't stand out necessarily in that environment as being all that odd. I mean, to the rest of the world, we're like, oh my God, you go over to that county, it's the most impoverished county in the area, little to no resources for anything. Mm-hmm. This is kind of a way of life as much as people like to pretend it's not. But it is, maybe not quite to this degree, but pretty damn close, just with fewer children. And society, you know, seems to be okay with that until we, you know, get the pictures and oh my goodness. This is going on everywhere. I mean, I've said before, I know where to look. I know where I could go in my town. I could probably find it pretty quickly in almost any town. And I could find 10 of these homes, maybe not with 16 kids, but with 2 or 3 living in pretty much the same conditions that everybody drives by every day and nothing is ever done about it with CPS and everything. We as a society seem to be okay with this because it's somebody else's problem.
So as I do when ideas pop in my head when we're covering cases like this, I just did a research. I just took a look at, I just said how many of these cases are annual that have this kind of a neglect and abuse, maybe not this number of kids because that's what you said, Tony. Mm-hmm. In 2022, there were 559,000 unique victims of abuse and neglect, with neglect affecting hundreds of thousands of children annually because of this kind of neglect.
Yeah.
559,000.
Yeah.
Near fatal and fatal and near fatal neglect kills 1,800 to 2,000 children annually from this kind of level of neglect.
What Elizabeth here? She's the woman who had the children, married off at 15, pregnant earlier too, then estranged from her family for 15 years. I find that an interesting term to say estranged at that age. I mean, her brother says she was indoctrinated. I mean, what does that kind of isolation do to a person's ability to recognize what's going on around them, Siobhan?
It completely alters the perception of reality. And so when people are raised in isolation like that, when they're living, let's say, with some trauma and have every aspect of their lives controlled and restricted, they begin to accept their fate. It just becomes normal. They become very passive and adjust to this dominant culture of this deprivation and abuse that they're living with. They learn to accept it, and they don't perceive that they have any agency or any way to escape. I mean, was she shackled and handcuffed in there? Apparently not. But she felt like a prisoner, and that was her perception of the world.
You know, one of the things that saved you and saves people in, I wouldn't call this a cult, but it's a very cult-like, you know, situation here where there's control of this, you know, whether it's imposed physically or psychologically, and, you know, someone leading this family dynamic. But one of the things that gets people out of it is that critical thinking element that all of a sudden something sparks it. At this point, is it even possible because of the, in other words, at what point does that ability to critical think, even introduced to it, get flushed out, or is it always a possibility, and what could actually ignite it again?
I think for Elizabeth, she probably was very much experiencing the passivity that would go with being a prisoner of war for decades and decades and decades. And she was not an adult when she went into this situation. So she didn't come in being much of a critical thinker just because she was a little girl. Right. And her odds for recovery, I like to think that she can improve, that she can do better. And I don't know what's going to end up, you know, legally in her future as far as prison or jail time, but that may feel like the healthiest life she's ever had, even if it's behind bars. She may have more autonomy there than she had living in this situation.
Can you imagine that the people that you're going to potentially, granted, doesn't know, who knows where, if, again, innocent until proven guilty, if she winds up serving time, you know, the type of people she'll serve time with. But even the potential that the people you serve time with are healthier than the people you've lived with your entire life. Oh, my God.
It actually would be probably the best thing in some, I mean, because it's somewhat of a protective environment. You know, it, to a certain extent, where other mutant-like folks can't, you know, necessarily weave into their world unchecked. There's at least some checking that goes in behind bars, and maybe actually will be a good thing. I mean, obviously, rehabilitation is not the most common thing behind bars, but anything outside of this environment, I might qualify as somewhat better than what was. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube as we continue to break down this case. The attorney general said the children looked almost feral. Some can't speak, some can't read. An 18-year-old can't write her own name. These 16 children spent their entire lives inside homes that functioned as a sealed world. No school, no doctors, no outside contact. Siobhan Scott is with us to help us break all of this down. I want to go to an interesting thing that was said by her attorney, Elizabeth's attorney. She said that the first thing that she asked about, and I think this has struck people as being a little bit odd, wasn't about getting out. It was about her children. Now, some people hear that and they're like, oh, she's a devoted mom in some weird sense of the term, or something else. There's a weird sense of distortion here. Can she be someone who believed she was taking the best care of the children that she could, and it still be this insanely harsh hellhole of a reality, but in her mind, she was just being mom on a Tuesday in the world that she knew.
And these poor kids were probably the extent of her, if you want to use the word love, you know, this was probably all she had, was her attachment with these kids. And in all likelihood, she has a very strong attachment to them.
Yeah.
But what does that mean? You know, it doesn't mean you know how to raise them properly. You don't know what you're doing. but clearly she had an emotional bond. And I don't think this living situation was about any ill intent on her part, is my guess. She was not trying to hurt the children. Now, there may have been other people in the home who were hurting the children. But my guess is that, you know, these kids meant the world to her. They were her world to her. That's all she had was these children.
But you see those pictures of that house, and if the interior pictures are legit, and that's still, I think, up in the air as of this recording. But from what we can tell, in any sense of the world, I mean, how does anybody's mind look at this and go, yeah, I'm doing my best for my kids.
Right. Right.
That's the hard thing to wrap one's mind around.
Hoarding is such, and you know, of course, we have hoarding and beyond here, yeah. Hoarding on steroids with the filth and everything. Yeah. But hoarding is surprisingly common, and I do meet up with that quite often in my work. The interesting thing about people with hoarding disorder is they never come to therapy and say, "I want help because I'm a hoarder." They hide that, and they hide it from the world. They hide it from the therapist. But when I often find out about it is when I'll interview a family member, and it may be someone in the home. It might be a sibling of an adult. And often when that person says, well, you know about the condition of the home, don't you? And I'm like, no, of course not. I don't go out to people's homes. I don't know what they live in. But I've met very professional people that appear well, well-dressed, well-groomed, well-put-together, and yet they are hoarders. And when I heard this from family members, all of a sudden, the kids' problems make sense. You know, then I understand more about what's going on. But it's very hard to treat, because hoarders, even though they know, perhaps know enough to be embarrassed about it, it really is a brain abnormality, and it's such a strong compulsion for them. It's not something that they typically seek help with. So you'll find a lot of people who appear, I'm thinking of professional people, who appear to be teachers and, you know, lawyers and people that you'd look at and go, well, they've obviously got a normal life or they've got it together, but they live in homes like that.
These people had neither going on. I mean, that's the thing. Right. I mean, there's no profession. I mean, no. There's obviously, there's a level of shame that I'm sure exists, which then makes people, you know, kind of circle the wagons. And you got four adults here that basically, is that part of what goes on? You get four people who are all living in this circle of shame, and it's so deep and so dark that, I mean, it's just so normalized at a certain point that it's not even felt as shame. This is just the lifestyle of what it is. And they can't see beyond it. I'm sure there's a fear element of being exposed, of having your children taken away. There's probably so many things at play here, but they are never pulling a single lever to remove those threats that they fear. But that is addiction as well.
Yeah.
I mean, that is the deficit. It's an alcoholic. I'm addicted to this, whatever. Same sort of dynamics are at play within the brain.
And I'm going to guess that there is one dominant person in the home. I don't know who the dominant person is, but it's the dominant person, could have been grandmother Christina, that sort of set the tone for the hoarding, for the stuff. Mm-hmm. And that person had so much control over everybody else in the family that nobody opposed it, that they just sort of gave up and went along with it.
And I want to follow up again, because Tony used the word shame, and I'm curious, Siobhan, because what popped in my mind is that, can shame exist if there's no comparison to have shame, to be shameful about? In other words, if you've been so isolated in a house like this with hoarding, but you have nothing to compare it to, would there be shame about the hoarding, or would there be shame about the lifestyle? Is it possible? I mean, I just don't know. Is that even possible?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it would depend probably on how much exposure to the outside world people had. And I think even if you're exposed to TV, right, which I don't know that these people were at all. But, you know, you have the sense of what normal is.
Right.
And if you're raised with a sense that, you know, we're really different from normal, then there's probably some shame about it. But like for the children who clearly had no idea what normal is, they don't even speak. I mean, they probably don't know enough to be ashamed of the situation.
And the other thing I wanted to circle back on too was I found it inspiring is a right word. I found it a little bit of a relief actually to hear Elizabeth's name, mm-hmm. that she cared. The first thing she said was to care about her kids. What popped in my mind was a case. I had to look it up because I couldn't remember the name of J.C. Duggard. She was abducted in 91 and wound up giving birth. The father was the abductor, and she wound up escaping with her kids. And this happened in, I think it was California. Philip Garrido did it years ago. She formed that bond with her kids in that really isolated abduction thing, and maintained a lot of empathy, even in spite of all the abuse that she was going through. Do you see that as playing out here? You know, that she was able to maintain this empathy that she has for her children, even if they might not even be hers or that they were forced upon her?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that that's a common situation in a case like that, where the woman bonds with the kids and has a very deep attachment to them, despite the horrendous circumstances.
Yeah.
These kids, obviously 16 of them, you're not going to find a foster kid or foster parent that's going to, oh, let's bring all the kids together. Oh, wait, maybe Jim, Bob, and Michelle would like to take a second round. Yeah. Oh, wait,
they
no.
keep popping in my mouth.
But you know, even that would be a better environment by a little. The fact that you have these 16 kids, they're in the system now. The amount of psychological help that every single one of them will need is going to be far beyond the abilities of 99.9% of any foster family available.
Yeah.
Or the group home or orphanage type situation where they stay at. How and what goes on next for these 16 kids? They're still kids. And the only world they knew was this. I mean, what do you do with children coming out of an environment like this? Obviously, keeping them together, probably not going to be an option.
Yeah.
But the system sees kids coming out of situations like this every single day, whether there's 16 siblings or not. How do you help them?
That is the big question, right? Because even when we compare this with the Turpin case with the 13 yeah. kids in California, and that was in a part of the country where there were more resources economically and more choices for foster homes and more funding for help for the kids. But they did not get good placements. You know, some yeah. of them did. Some of them were taken advantage of in their foster homes and were yeah. not treated well. So this is the million-dollar question, is where can you find a living situation where the kids are basically going to be reparented from the start? You know, mm-hmm. they need every kind of structure that they can possibly get, not only from you know, how to bathe yourself, how to speak, how to communicate, how to eat normally, what you eat. I mean, it's just like starting with an infant who may be 14 or 15 years old, you know, and trying yeah. to repair it.
And to that, Siobhan, I can only imagine, so you do that reversal, that deep empathy for the kids coming out of this. The only feeling of safety, as twisted as that safety was this household environment, was each other, because it's all they have. There's no yin and yang in comparison, contrast, and no anything different than this. And so can you imagine you're now removed from the only people you've ever known in your life, the only people that you have felt safe with, and now you're thrust into and even separated from all these people. What's the first step you would take as a therapist to be, before you even taught them how to speak in some cases, or write or do anything, because that is so far, yeah. that's like running, yeah. and they don't even know how to crawl yet.
Yeah.
What's the first steps you take at these different age levels to allow them to feel safe again, that they can actually start making some slow movement and progress towards healthy?
That is a big question, right? And I think it's going to, number one, be the connection, the human connection, because I think nurturing, loving, compassionate, attuned human relationships are how people heal. And that's what these kids are going to need. Yeah. I mean, there are a million skills they need, right? But before you even get into skill building, how do you meet them where they're at? How do you try to maybe engage them in a bit of play, expose them to, you know, small animals can sometimes be something that they can connect with, you know, are their pets. But just how to reach them on that very heart-to-heart level, I always talk about. And you have to start with that sense of safety. And, you know, I'm imagining these kids are hungry. I imagine they haven't been well fed. So just meeting their physical needs would be important. And then looking at long range, yeah, there's going to be years of psychological work ahead of them to help them develop.
Do you think allowing them to maintain contact with their parents is good or bad, or how do you think that's going to play out?
That's a really tough one. And I think we'd have to know more about the parents and do the parents have the capacity to be connected and attuned and provide some kind of soothing for them. My guess, just from what we know, is that Elizabeth would be the one that they would probably want contact with. And so, yes, working with, this is a big group, but you'd want to be looking at the whole systemic aspects of working with the adults and with the children, and which of the adults were the safest person for the kids to be connected with, and how much contact do you structure, and how would you structure that? I think those are all really important pieces to be looking at. Yeah.
I mean, just on the surface here, it certainly looks like none of them are safe for the children. But I mean, and obviously we have systems that are all about family reunification and that sort of bullshit. When you have something like this, it is really, and I know, you know, some people will not be happy with this, but is really the best thing for these children? And that's what we have to look at this point is these children, the adults, honestly, you know, yes, victims to a certain extent, but have fun. You get to, you know, reap the rewards of your consequential choices. But these kids, that's where the focus needs to be. Is the best thing for them to be in no contact with their genetic family ever again, and maybe not the brothers and sisters either, because every piece of that is going to be broken human beings, and every single one of those people need to be in an environment where they can grow, where they can learn, where they can develop basic human skills, and having reminders and things that pull them back into the absolutely horrendous toxic world which they came out of. Is it best just clean break it for the best odds of any of these children being a functional human being in society at any point in their future existence? Is it just fresh start across the board? Yes, because there literally is no goodness. Even if there is some comfort there, yeah, there's comfort in eating absolute shit food. It doesn't mean it's good for you. You know, and there's absolute shit love too, and it doesn't mean it's good for you. It may make you feel good in that moment, and then, you know, you're regretting that shortly thereafter. Is that kind of what needs to be looked at in a situation like this?
I would say it's a case by case situation, probably with each child. And I think that if they had one of these adults, and I'm going to go with mother, if they had a bond that was meaningful to them, that to just completely 100% sever that and sever it permanently would probably not be the ideal thing for them. But certainly, should she have lots of time alone with them? No. Should she have custody of them ever again? No. But would there be a safe way for them to have some kind of contact with her in a way that was soothing to them and comforting to them, because they may be very worried about her at this point, or at least the older kids are worried about her, what happened to her. Mm-hmm. And so I think you just sort of have to go case by case, child by child. And yet there may be some, particularly, again, older kids that want nothing to do with any of them. And yeah. In that case, I would honor that as well.
And one more thing I wanted to add, because I saw one of the listeners had asked about is there funding for this in the system for their counseling and stuff. So yeah, how it works in Ohio, Child Protective Services, County Job and Family Services, it is funded by the county, the state. Medicaid does pick up children foster care if state of custody qualified for Medicaid, which covers therapy, individual, group and family, psychiatric care, medications, assessments, trauma focused programs as well as there's other additional fundings are available through the state of Ohio, depending on the high profile that this case gets. So hypothetically, yes, there. I say hypothetically,
would put a big hypothetical on that, because it sounds lovely on paper. That's one of those things where it's like people go, oh, great. It'll all be taken care of then, right?
And then there's, like we saw yesterday, it's a great program, but no follow-up. Right. You know,
and no follow-up, no funding, no staffing. And, oh, yeah, we'll get to that. You'll get your counseling, your once a year.
And I'm
counselor.
Always worried about the ones that come in here because they know how to work the system. Oh, I'll take them in foster care. I'll get them counseling. Yeah. Where's my check?
Yeah. Yeah.
I always worry about those ones. Now, granted, there's a lot of really, really good humanitarians out there doing a lot of good work in foster care system. I mean, I got some in my neighborhood here, but at the same time, though, there's people that'll abuse anything.
Well, I mean, the systems are so broken across the country of where the focus is and where the funding goes and who's checking on what and when the system gives a shit and when it doesn't give a shit. And it's so backward. I mean, I've seen it firsthand and it's insane. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube as we continue our conversation here. The Sider family got caught because of a random misdemeanor warrant because dad couldn't keep his pants on around the neighbors, allegedly. Oh, that's it. That's the entire safety net that worked. The store employees noticed the neighbors were feet away. Nobody called. And here's the uncomfortable premise. Psychotherapist Siobhan Scott is here to walk us through. This case is not rare. Families like this exist in every state, every county, seen and unseen at the same time. This next part here is about the psychology of everyone on the outside. Why we notice and do nothing, and how many of these houses we've walked past. Is it really that, though? Is it really that we say we do nothing, or is it more so societal, because we know if we say something, we see something, nothing happens? That seems to be more of what it has been. And then why expose ourselves? Why waste the time? Why do this when you report it and it goes absolutely nowhere. A lot of attention being brought on the people who saw him at the Dollar General or here or there. I mean, do the people who saw these folks and smelled them and felt the despair and saw those kids? And when I see kids like this at the store, I mean, it's heartbreaking. And my immediate reaction is they're effed. They are completely effed if these are the parents that they have. But I know there's absolutely nothing I can do by walking past them at the Dollar General or the Walmart or wherever that will help these kids or save these kids from the absolute shit, horrible decision-making mutant parents that they have. That seems to be the reality that we live in, is we like to pretend we're saying something and seeing something and doing something, but the doing something is the part that never really goes on, or if it does, it's very half-assed, and then the system is designed to put the kids back with abusers. That seems to be our problem here. We have no place to put them, so the convenient thing is, well, let's just try and hope to God mom and dad change their ways, and they never do, and it's just cycle, and it just goes on and on and on and on.
You know, the person I'd like to have a conversation with is the obstetrician. She gave birth in the hospital. First thing when I heard this story, I thought she must have had all these babies at home, but no, she gave birth in the hospital, and if you're an obstetrician and you have a young woman in her 20s, early 30s, and you're saying, how many births have you had? You know, this is your 13th, your 14th, your 15th. Don't you ask some questions at that point? You know, this is so far out of the normal of human behavior. And I guess that this is a hospital that was too small to have a funded social work position, you know? But isn't this a family where even at that level, at the medical level, people would have been alarmed and been looking at this closely and asking questions? And it doesn't seem like that happened.
But is there, I guess my question to you, is there anything that they could have done? I mean, I would have to guess that after all these births in this hospital, that people, you know, on the side are like, oh my God, she's back again. And there's chatter amongst like, oh, this is, you know, and there's chatter, but is there truly anything that they could have done? I don't know the answer to that.
I like to think in a functional public health system, which
in a functional public health
system. In a functional public health system.
Yes.
And I have
the word functional.
Right. I have seen this happen at some times. If there's a family where there are questions, where there are concerns, you don't even necessarily need to open a CPS file, but you can make a request that a public health nurse go out to the home and check on the family. You know, how is mom doing postpartum? And I think, you know, when we're looking at systemic changes, why doesn't that happen with every birth, where there's just a follow-up visit from a public health nurse a few months down, weeks or months down the road? How is everybody doing? You know, you would catch postpartum depression that way. You could catch people who are, you know, inadequately nourished. You could certainly catch these hoarding households. But I think a home visit would be a good thing.
I hope to bring a little more to the conversation. I haven't had a chance to talk to my daughter yet, who is a labor and delivery nurse. And so she is so insightful on this kind of stuff. And I just haven't had a chance to talk to her. She's been working nonstop since this broke. So I plan on asking her about what she do in this situation. What do her colleagues do? Because I know they are so attentive to people like this. I've just heard stories. I just know her. I know her colleagues there. I've never seen more passionate people about what they do in the world. So it's a good question.
Well, I mean, it's one thing to catch these things, and I don't even feel like these things weren't caught. This is out in the open. I mean, these people caught these things. It's just there's nothing that happens when they are caught. I mean, it's like, what do you do? Okay, we've determined there's a house with 16 children. Who wants to adopt the kids that can't speak, that are, you know, feral? Like, what do you do with it? What do you do with these poor souls that are the victims of their circumstance? I mean, we don't seem to have a very good plan in place for any of that. We have a lot of talk of we're going to catch this, we're going to do that, but then it's like, okay, now what do we do next? and that's where we seem to be stuck. Why are we stuck there, Siobhan? Why are we so stuck there as a society where it's like, here's how our system is broken. Here's where we bring these problems on a silver platter to the attention of society, and it's like, we got no real way to deal with this. And we never seem to like legislate anything or do anything to fix this massive problem in our society, which is then systemic of all of the other problems that end up coming into our society when people end up becoming adults and they can't function.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's, I think, a place where you and I often get to. It's like, hey, we're great at identifying the problems, but what the hell do you do about it?
Yeah.
And we run into it. I live in Portland, Oregon, and we've got a big, as most major urban areas do, we've got a big problem with unhoused folks, mentally ill folks, addicted to drug folks, and a lot of pregnant, unhoused, mentally ill, addicted folks who are living, you know, under the bridge.
Yeah.
And everybody throws their hands up. What can we do? What can we do? And we go around and around and around with trying to come up with solutions and trying to get people into treatment, but they don't want treatment. And I think we have a country built on the concept of freedom, right? Mm-hmm. And we take that to an extreme degree, that people are free to eat out of trash cans if they want to. Are they free to feed their children out of trash cans if they want to? Are they free to raise children and live under a bridge somewhere? And I think that's where a lot of this gets stuck, is that we don't want the, you know, you'll hear so many times political speeches, we don't want the government. We don't want the government controlling us. We don't want the government monitoring us. That's a communist system or whatever, yeah. You know, it's like, yeah, this idea of freedom. Well, there are people that can't manage life, and they should not be bringing kids into unsafe, awful situations. And I think it's something, is it uniquely American? I don't know. We may struggle with it more than other countries do because we have such an emphasis on personal freedom here.
Do we need to revisit? I mean, there are obviously, you know, group homes and essentially orphanages and things of that nature that exists in the world. And we think back to many, many old days where in state hospitals and things of that nature that were not run well. And I know we've had this conversation 1,000 times, too. But for the sake of the story, we should touch it again. Do we need to revisit some of these things on a massive scale again, where we do have massive campuses that exist for state hospital care for people who truly need it, or for children who are in homes like this, where it's certainly not the best situation where you got the parents there and it's a lovely family, but the state hospital home or the state orphanage home is still better than this. Yeah. I feel like we could do better in a lot of these areas, but we don't want to touch them because, oh, well, that was real icky back then. It wasn't. Yeah. Well, we could do better. We could totally revisit this stuff. We could create a safer environment. And yes, they're all ripe for abuse. They always have been. They always will be. That's why you have oversight and you fix it. We don't just keep going, well, it could go wrong this way. Well, guess what? Out in society, it's going 10 times worse. So it may not be the best, but it's better than that. And we can do this, but we, for whatever reason, we always seem to be telling ourselves that we can't. Yeah. And we have to just stick with the status quo, which clearly has not been working out very well. Is there anything going on in this world, in our country, in systems like that to bring some of those things back, or to rebuild or start from scratch with a new concept in those veins that would better serve children, especially in these sort of environments? Because right now it's just shuffle the kids around from one random home to the next in most cases, mm-hmm, for until those parents go, oh shit, I didn't know it was going to be difficult raising a child with mental health problems because of the shitholes they came out of. And then they get sent to the next home, and then abuse happens along the way. And we're just like, oh, well, we did our best. We don't do anything right. We can't seem to figure these problems out, even though they're staring us in the face, mm-hmm, every damn day.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, therapeutic residential treatment programs do exist for kids. And we have some for mentally ill adults as well. We don't have nearly enough. And so you don't need this gigantic, big institutional orphanage, but we do need programs that are smaller, that are based in homes, large homes, where you have a team of, it's not just a husband and wife, but you have a team of people who rotate in throughout the day and throughout the night, rotating staff who are well-trained, educated. You have therapists, you know, that work there as well. Treatment plans for every kid. Kids' needs are met. So we do know how to do those things, but the problem is funding those things, and do taxpayers prioritize that we do need to build a better system of, I'll call it residential care, you know, rather than institutionalizing people. Mm-hmm. But where if you're an adult and you're living out under a bridge and you're rolling in the dirt and screaming because you can't stop using meth, that we can look at that and say, you know, as a society, we need to do better for that person, because this is not a person who can make a choice. You know, they're too mentally ill. And can we come up with a better living situation for them and enact that? You know, this is called assisted outpatient treatment, is happening in some states. It needs to happen more and it needs to be funded more. But where you can say, you know, this idea about personal freedom, this is a great concept, but some people are clearly not able to manage it and they are having kids. And we do need more residential care for folks.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I've been distracted trying to do all the research since you're talking about fixes. What popped in my mind is we keep seeing all these overhauls of all these other shiny programs all over the place. And so I was curious, when was the last time there's a real overhaul of any of the programs associated with this? The empty air I'm coming to is pretty interesting. They updated their homeschooling program. No extra funding.
They downgraded basically in terms.
Yeah, because I was curious. You know, I am a root cause guy. You know, what root cause can prevent? You know, it's like yesterday when we were talking, Tony was like, you know, people and politicians and everyone keeps coming up with Band-Aids, but Band-Aids don't fix the problem. Band-Aids mask it till the next election, so it can be a nice slogan for people. But is anyone doing anything? You know, you don't have to like the politics of it, but Rudy Giuliani, way back when I first got assigned New York in the FBI, first thing he did to overhaul crime in the city was he got rid of squeegees, you know, the squeegee guys. Because if you take care of the grassroots level, it then will spring from there and then crime will go down. You know, that was the theory and it worked out pretty good. And then Bloomberg took it over. And then so since then, they did the same thing. Like, let's go at the root cause. And so yesterday we talked about the root cause. What kind of things, instead of Band-Aids with all these things after it's already had them, very reactively, what can we do proactively when they're really small, really young? Like, that's why I asked Siobhan about the camp thing. You know, what kind of new programs at that grassroots level can get in there to prevent all these things from happening? And I've researched, has anything been done in that area?
No.
No.
You know, so there, again, people keep pouring slogans at Band-Aids, but it's still not fixing these problems.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm ranting. I want to throw this. I mean, because I know you said, you know, the taxpayers need to give a shit enough to do anything. Is it that the taxpayers don't care, or is that the legislature doesn't bring any ideas either, and that they don't want to go there, and that there may be other forces at play here that don't want to be examined, that are enjoying the system as is? I mean, who's benefiting from any of this, I guess, would be the question. Who's benefiting from a broken child welfare system? Predators? Mm-hmm. Is that our answer? I mean, at the end of the day, this doesn't seem to be that it need. I don't know. I don't think any of these fixes are like rocket science. We just don't do them.
Yeah.
Who's being incentivized? Who's enjoying the system being as broken as it is, and basically a clearinghouse for broken children, predators?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, here's what I think is another problem with it is that, you know, so here we are, we're compassionate, caring people on our show. All our contributors are. And we're critical thinkers. But when you look at people that get elected, not all of them, you know, but in general, you don't have that kind of, because I don't, like my years ago, people said, Robin, do you ever want to run for politics out of the FBI? I said, what are you, nuts? No. You know, but to be a decision maker and that can actually redirect funds and attack, you know, the core root of things, you actually have to be a critical thinker and actually look at cause and effect. I mean, we have a big employment issue, understaffing in critical jobs. I mean, just think about what one small program of exposing kids to good, healthy behaviors at a young age could do for everything in this country or everything in the world. Yet it doesn't, and it's not rocket science, like we keep saying, but no one has the willingness to just make a shift. And I don't care. Both parties, you know, claim this, you know, so just do something. It is such a small, minute fix to just, instead of treating the cut with a Band-Aid, just don't have that little nick hurt that's going to get infected, because that's exactly what keeps happening in every single one of these cases. It's just infuriating.
And it takes me back, this thing about, yes, Robin, you should run for office. We would all love that. We'd vote for you. But but we didn't even have a federal law against child abuse until 1974. And so you know, when we look for solutions from politicians, I mean, I think they need to hear from a lot of people that this matters to us. And we want the welfare of kids to take priority, because it, even if it costs money up front, it's going to save so much down the road.
That's,
you know,
that's so what's so mind blowing. It's so mind blowing. I mean, you want to save taxpayer dollars, you want to save money to do big projects? Absolutely. How do you do it? You don't pay for $1 million of Band-Aids. You just spend a couple hundred thousand, or even just a couple hundred, a couple thousand, to just create a program here. I mean, because the net is going to be, would be wide. Would you catch everyone in that net? No. But if you, I'm just think about, if you look at those numbers, we're talking, what number did I give out? 500,000, something like that? If you just think about the impact, if you could create one program with a couple thousand dollars that makes a 10% difference, that is 100,000 kids. And that's only 10% difference. The likelihood of it being greater, even more. That's 100,000 kids that just are better off today than they would have been otherwise.
We have to, as a society in our country, we have to have a society saying, you know what? Not everybody deserves to have complete autonomy and freedom to do whatever you want. Eat out of the garbage can and then feed your kids out of the garbage can.
And then manifest in things like Nick Reiner.
Yeah, I mean, you need, we need a society that says, you know what? You're not healthy. You're a danger to yourself and others. And because we're sane and we're not idiots, we'd like to help you. We don't want you to not have any autonomy here forever, but we need to help get you there. And the only way to get you there is by stepping in and saying, you can't take care of yourself right now. If you see an injured animal on the street or something like that, you want to care for it. We're more caring about an injured dog than we are the people. And all in the name of freedom. People don't seem to understand the difference between, you know, freedom and actual care.
Compassion.
Compassionate care for other people. It is not compassionate. It is not caring to let people live in their own squalor who are incapable of getting out of it. That is the exact opposite.
Because compassion is empathy plus action. Yep. And that equals compassion. And I mean, I served my country for many, many years, like my entire life. And I'm a big freedom guy. I love our Constitution. Yep. It gives a lot of freedoms. But freedom without compassion, what the hell is the point?
Good point.
Exactly. We'll wrap on that. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube.
Robin Drake running for president.
That's what I saw. I should never have said that. My loving critic, as you all know, or Kim, would have a problem with it, I think.
I would too. You can't leave this show, even if it serves your country more.
But can you imagine the viewers you'd get?
Your thoughts, comment section. All right, Siobhan's book, Nightbird, available wherever you get books. Also, audiobook. Please
read it multiple
go and check
times,
it out.
Too. It's you great. Get something every time you read it.
Yeah. Her story, extremely powerful, especially on this topic here, too. And Robin's It's Not All About Me, his latest, available wherever you get books and audiobooks. Leave a review on Amazon and go check that out. Until next time, for Robin, for Siobhan, for Todd, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. Kalshi. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better. With new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect, the fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. Kalshi. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here. And if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. Kalshi. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. Kalshi. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
Hey, it is Ryan Seacrest here. Want to bring a little Hollywood excitement to your day? Take a few spins with Chumba Casino's brand new game, Ryan Seacrest's 10K Ways. It's free and features 10,000 ways to play, giving you nonstop action, including thrilling bonus respins and cascading reels. Every spin brings something new, so step into the spotlight, enjoy the excitement, and play today at ChumbaCasino.com.
Ch-ch-ch-ch-chumba. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. Kalshi. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. Kalshi. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. Kalshi. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.